Hey everybody, this is Eric Mueller, the host of The Eric Mueller Show. You're tuned in to the podcast that explores what makes any successful person's inner clock tick by unlocking the most impactful tools within their success portfolios. Today's guest, Mark Podolsky, is known as the Land Geek. Mark's widely considered to be the country's most trusted and foremost authority on buying and selling raw, undeveloped land. He's actively invested in real estate and raw land for almost 20 years, and he's completed over 5,000 unique transactions in that time. Let's head on over to the interview. I'm joined today by Mark Podolsky, a.k.a. The Land Geek. Mark, welcome to the show.
Eric Mueller, thank you so much for having me.
Mark, I've got to say I'm impressed, man. 5,000 unique transactions, investing in real estate for almost two decades. I did the quick math. That's roughly one transaction every 1.5 days. Mark, wow. How did you pull that off? Tell us your story.
Sure. So if we rewind the tape to 2000, I was a miserable, micromanaged, 45-minute commute to work and back investment banker, specializing in mergers and acquisitions with private equity groups. And Eric, it got so bad for me, I wouldn't get the Sunday blues anticipating Monday coming around. I'd get the Friday blues anticipating the weekend going by really fast and having to be back to work on Monday. Have you ever experienced that?
I don't really think that I have, but I certainly can imagine what that might feel like. And that just, I mean, when do you enjoy life then, right? I mean, that's terrible.
Yeah. I mean, it was terrible. So my firm hires this guy and he's telling me that as a side hustle, he's buying up raw land, pennies on the dollar. He's flipping them online and he's making a 300% return on his money. And Eric, I'm looking at companies all day long and a great company, great, has 15% EBITDA margins or free cash flow. Average company is 10%. And I'm looking at companies all day long, less than 10%. So of course, I don't believe him. So I've got $3,000 saved up for car repairs. And I go to New Mexico with him. I do exactly what he tells me to do at a tax deduction. I buy 10 half-acre parcels, an average price of $300 each. I sell them online, and they all sell for an average price of $1,200 each, 300%. It worked. So I took all that money. I went to another auction in Arizona. This is where I live. And again, it's 2000. There's no one in the room. And I'm buying up lots and acreage for nothing. And I sell all that property and I made over $90,000 cash. So I go to my wife and I say, honey, I'm going to quit my job and become a full-time land investor. And she's pregnant. And she's like, absolutely not. So I said, okay. So it took me 18 months for the land investing income to exceed the investment banking income. And then I quit and I've been doing it full-time ever since. And I've just created a machine so that it's just an automated deal machine.
Yes, you've been able to automate that and leverage that system to simplify and scale, which I think that's like, it was for me, certainly when I started diving into your bio and researching, you know, your podcast was really like that automation piece. Is there something with that you've noticed has kind of been like the easy fix, or has it all been just challenging to get to that point where you finally can start incorporating automation?
Yeah, I mean, I remember kind of bragging to my mentor, and my mentor had sold his company for over $300 million. And so we're meeting for coffee and I'm telling him what I'm doing. And he's like, I slipped and I said, I called myself an entrepreneur. He's like, stop, don't insult me. I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, don't call yourself an entrepreneur. He's like, if you die tomorrow, you know, what happens to your so-called business? And then it dawned on me like, oh my gosh, I'm doing everything. I just liked doing it because it wasn't my investment banking job and I had all this energy. And so he's like, you know, you need to build something bigger than yourself. And so then I started creating systems, processes, getting people and using software and automation to really get myself out of working in the land investing business and just working on it. And that's really what I you know, it took years, like 5 years to get to that point.
Wow. Yeah, gosh. So clearly a long grind. And Mark, before we dive even further into your expertise on how you created passive income through your investments in real estate and raw land, really focusing on that like raw land piece later on here is going to be, I think, the cool thread for those of you listening. But before that, Mark, we want to know what makes up your success portfolio. So if you're out there listening and you're new to this show, let me give you just this quick background. So I look at it like, think of an investment portfolio. That is like the compilation of your investments, maybe your 401k, maybe individual stocks. They lay the foundation for financial goals in your life. Well, here on the Eric Mueller Show, we want to discover how successful people like Mark invest in themselves and build the foundation for their success. So Mark, start us off. What are some skills or traits or habits, mindsets, attributes? What are some things that come to your mind that make up your success portfolio?
So I have one overarching goal. It's very simple. I just want to be a good ancestor. So at the end, right, I don't have to keep any of the money I've made, right? Mm-hmm. It's just all impermanent. Only thing that of lasting value that I will actually be able to leave are my values. Mm-hmm. So then I think about, okay, what are my values? And you know, what habits do I want to cultivate? What do I want to leave on and do? So I think the first one is a calm mind, right? It all starts in our head. And so I have a daily meditation practice that really just deepens this sense of equanimity, that there's nothing out there that can really rattle me. And mm-hmm. I can constantly reframe any experience and have this peace of mind. Because without that fundamental peace of mind, you know, we could go through life just, you know, in this dream state. And, you know, we're constantly thinking about the past. We're constantly striving for the future. And we're just missing, you know, the moment, so to speak. And so without that, I don't feel like I could be successful without really enjoying that each and every moment of life. There's like, have you heard that Zen story about Banzan?
I don't think I have. Share more.
So Banzan's this, you know, Zen meditation teacher, and he's in the market, and he overhears a customer talking to the butcher, and the customer says, hey, you know, to the butcher, hey, what's your best cut of meat? And the butcher says, all the cuts of meat I have are the best cuts of meat. None of my cuts of meat are not the best. And at this point, Banzan becomes enlightened because he realizes all the moments in life are the best moments. They're all precious. And so, you know, that's sort of like the first habit, is just peace of mind. I think the second one is, you know, working on being fit physically, feeling good. And, you know, doing something every single day to get breathless or, you know, to get stronger so that I can age well, right? I don't want to be the guy that can't pick up his grandchildren. So I think, you know, fitness for me is a key pillar to my success and feeling good, you know, day to day. And then I think the third one is just deepening my relationships. And at the end of life, that's really what you look back on, are how deep are your relationships? Like, you know, no one ever, you know, it's on their deathbed, like, gosh, I wish I spent more time working or creating more wealth, right? It's,
right.
You know, how deep were those relationships with all the people in my life, my loved ones, my friends, my family, my associates. And I think if I can really cultivate those three habits each day and be mindful of those three habits, you know, hopefully if all goes well and I get lucky, I could look back on my life and say, oh, I was a good ancestor. And if I'm a good ancestor, I would then consider myself a success.
Mark, I love that. That is a very unique way to think of that, is to be a good ancestor. Because you think back, you know, there's tons of ancestors that we didn't meet in person. You know, we can do the ancestry.com and find out who they were and maybe where they came from. But really what gets me thinking here for you, Mark, is if your ancestor in the future, rather, so someone, you know, someone 100, 200 years from now, if they were to look back and look at your life, what would you want them to say about your success? What do you think their definition of success really would be for you looking back?
Well, I think that they would say that, you know, he really passed on his most treasured values and created and was, you know, constantly other focused. So, you know, there's this idea of the second mountain. I don't know if you've read that book by David Brooks, where the first mountain is egoic. And it's not that the first mountain's not important, but it's typically egoic, right? You your family tells you, hey, get a good education, get a good job. You get the nice house, you get the nice cars, you go on the nice vacations, and you get to the top of that first mountain. And yeah, you've got status and you've got some security, but it's empty. So you go to the second mountain, and the second mountain is purpose, vocation, it's community, it's faith and spirituality, it's relationships, it's love, it's intimacy. And I think if someone looked back and said, oh, this was a second mountain person that really looked to improve those aspects of, you know, his descendants' lives, then I think that would be good enough for me.
Yeah, and even further more into that, Mark, do you find going back to those habits that make up your success portfolio that you cultivate through being mindful on a daily basis, do you find that there are certain driving forces that keep you pushing towards that? Like, is it family? Is it, you know, the fact that you're giving back to your students through your current company? What is that for you? Can you pin it down to like one or two forces that keep you moving?
I think that the force is just to be useful. I just want to contribute every day. And I certainly, my family is a driver in the sense that, well, I'm the model for them. And so I want to model for them, you know, here's somebody who's, you know, trying to be happy, trying to be smart. When I say smart, that means, you know, I'm planning for the future and useful. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, all three are so important. There's, you know, if you look at somebody who's just smart and useful, we could say, oh, that's the kid that, you know, gets pushed to go into an Ivy League school and become a, you know, doctor and lawyer, but they're not happy, right? That's not their dream, it's their parents' dream. And then you could look at somebody who's happy and useful, but not smart. That would be somebody who is going to the Peace Corps. Like, no, that's great, right? They're contributing, but they're sort of sacrificing their long-term future. And I could make the argument that if they had just made, you know, a lot of money, that would relieve a lot of financial anxiety for them, and they could even make a bigger impact, not just being, you know, just donating their time, but they could donate their time and their resources. And then you could look at the person who's happy and smart, but not useful, that's just focused on themselves and maybe passive income, but they're not being useful to others.
Yeah, they're probably going to struggle with that purpose point later on too, I would think, because, you know, I've spoken with other people on this show, and those of you listening can attest to this, that, you know, really the people that have been on here have said, like, don't use money as the sole driver in your life. And even Mark has just shared this earlier, that, you know, you can't take it with you, basically, and you're no point in making so much of it, and you don't use it, and you don't take it with you. Like, what's the point of that, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a law of diminishing returns to everything. I mean, you need to have enough money, mm-hmm. but you know, it's kind of like a swimming pool, right? Like, you don't need to have a 1,000-foot pool to have fun in the pool.
Yeah.
You don't need but then again, you don't want a 2-foot pool either. But a 10-foot
right.
pool, you can have a lot of fun. So I think just defining for yourself how much is enough, what are the things in life that are truly going to be meaningful to you, and how much, you know, money does that need to provide you? And then, you know, it's not about making money. Money's just this neutral thing. It's how much value can you provide? And then in exchange for that value, you get what we call money.
Right. And for you, Mark, so for your expertise in terms of being the land geek, why raw land? Like, why not just buy a house and rent it out? I think that's possibly the first question that came to someone's mind when they heard me talk about your bio just a few minutes ago. They were maybe thinking, like, why didn't he get into Airbnbs? Why is he not in short-term rentals? Like, why raw land, Mark?
Well, Eric, I have no business even owning a home. Like, I'm not a fixer. I don't like it. I don't like fixing things up. I don't like the physical nature of it, meaning contractors and subcontractors. It doesn't appeal to me, and certainly not dealing with a renter. So my model is passive income. I make land cash flow like a rental home, but I don't have to deal with any renters, rehabs, renovations, or rodents. And so for me, that is very appealing. And the fact that it's 90% automated with software on the front end, inexpensive virtual assistants, and software on the back end, just for me, it's way better than any other model out there.
Yeah. And as far as like you hinted at that automation earlier. So really, I guess, what are we talking about when we're talking about automation in terms of being able to buy real estate such as raw land parcels like you did early on and made that 300% return?
So as far as automation is concerned, you know, if Eric, let me just kind of walk you through the model step by step, and then we can kind of go deeper into that piece. So Eric, where do you live?
I live in Minnesota.
Okay. You live in Minnesota. And I'm going to assume that you own 5 acres of raw land in Colorado, but you owe $200 in back taxes. So Eric, you're essentially advertising two important things to me. Number one, you have no emotional attachment to that raw land. You're in Minnesota, the property's in Colorado. And number two, you're financially distressed in some weird way because you haven't paid your property taxes. And we don't pay for things like our property taxes. We don't value them in the same way. As a result, the county treasurer keeps sending you notices saying, Eric, if you don't pay your property taxes, you're going to lose that property to a tax deed or a tax lien investor. So all I'm going to do is look at the comparable sales on your 5-acre parcel for the last 12 to 18 months. I'm going to take the lowest comparable sale, let's say it's $10,000, and divide by 4. And that's going to get me what Warren Buffett would call a 300% margin of safety. So I sent you an actual offer for $2,500. Now you accept it. Why? Because for you, $2,500 is better than nothing. In reality, 3 to 5% of people accept my quote unquote top dollar offer. But now that you've accepted it, I have to go through due diligence or in-depth research. I have to confirm you still own the property. I have to confirm back taxes are only $200. I have to make sure there's been no breaks in the chain of title, no liens or encumbrances. And I have this whole property due diligence checklist that I outsource to my team in the Philippines. It costs about $11. And they're connected to an American title company. Now, if I was investing more than $5,000, I'd take no title risk and I would close traditionally through a title company. But since this is only $2,500, everything checks out. And I then write you a check for $2,300. I write the county treasurer a check for $200. And now I own your 5-acre parcel free and clear. Now I'm going to sell this in 30 days or less and make a cash flow. So Eric, I have a built-in best buyer. Do you know who it is?
No.
It's the neighbors. The neighbors. So I'm going to send out neighbor letters saying, hey, here's your opportunity. Protect your privacy. Protect your views. Know your neighbor. So oftentimes the neighbors will buy. Now, if they pass, I'll go to my buyer's list. The buyer's list passes, I'll go to a little website you may have never heard of. It's called Craigslist. It's the 15th most trafficked website in the United States. I'll go to one that I know you've heard of called Meta or Facebook buy sell groups and the marketplace. And then I'm going to go to the lands, landmodo.com, landsofamerica.com, landandfarm.com, landflip.com, landhub.com. These are platforms where people buy and sell raw land. But the secret is I'm going to make it irresistible for that next buyer. So all I'm going to do to control that 5-acre parcel is ask for a $2,500 down payment. And then I'm going to make it a car payment. Let's say $297 a month and 9% interest for the next 84 months. So Eric, it's a one-time sale. I'm going to get my money out on the down payment. I could go 6 to 10 months out. And then I'm getting $297 a month and 9% interest over the next 84 months. No renters, no rehabs, no renovations, no rodents. And because I'm not dealing with the tenant, I'm exempt from Dodd-Frank, RESPA, and the SAFE Act, all this onerous real estate legislation. So the game that we can play is, can we create enough land notes where your passive income exceeds your fixed expenses, and now you're working because you want to, not because you have to.
Yeah. And Mark, I thought a video on your YouTube channel that was really helpful was the 3 fatal mistakes to avoid when buying land. And we'll save that. I'll tag that in the show notes. Those of you listening, please go check it out. But I think it's extremely helpful. And it was really eye-opening to me because his first point, I didn't even know that website existed. So we'll leave that there as kind of a teaser, Mark. Get some traction on your YouTube channel and, you know, get people to check out what you're doing over there. But do you think there are some really big important reasons why everyone should be creating passive income in raw land? Are there anything that comes to mind where you're like, you know, it's a no-brainer to do this type of investing?
Well, I think that you want to get out of what I call solo economic dependency, which means if you're personally not working, you're not making any money. So think about anybody with a job freelancers, solopreneurs. Let's pick on people that have solved their money problems, but not their time problems. Doctors, lawyers, dentists. So if the dentist's hands aren't in the patient's mouth, the dentist isn't generating any revenue. And so ultimately, that's a really insecure way to live. Anything can happen. And so I think to have that passive income, you're really securing your future. So you're getting rid of financial insecurity, number one. But more importantly, you're creating total freedoms for yourself so that you can work when you want, where you want, and with whom you want. And so you can really move up what I would call Maslow's hierarchy of needs into self-actualization and figure out what your true purpose is in life. And then to get back to the beginning of the conversation, when you have that time and that freedom to explore those deeper issues of purpose and meaning in your life, you can then go and do it. But so many people are working what I call it like a scarcity mentality. Like they go to bed feeling like they didn't get enough done that day, and they wake up feeling like they didn't get enough sleep. And I think at some point we just all want agency in our lives, and nobody wants to just, you know, coast through life, getting to work at a certain time, being done at a certain time, dealing with a boss, the HR, all those headaches. They want to have total control of their life. And then within that total control, total freedom.
Yeah. And to that point, Mark, as far as discovering purpose, I'm sure we have a listener out there that is thinking, I don't know necessarily what my purpose is in life yet. And maybe they do have a job at this present moment. Maybe they are in undergrad, maybe they're past undergrad, maybe they didn't even go to college, and they are, you know, working some type of job that is providing them an income, but they don't feel fulfilled. Do you have any advice as far as how to discover that purpose? Like, you know, how to rise up into that realm of self-actualization and realize what you're here for? If that, you know, it's a big question. I mean, that kind of the what is the purpose of life question, but, you know, more directly, like, what is someone's purpose to feel fulfilled? Is there anything that comes to your mind as far as how you might help that person?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if I was talking to my children, I would say yes to lots of different things. And when you're not feeling it, go on to the next thing. And if you're not feeling that thing, go on to the next thing. So you've got to try a lot of things when you're young to figure out what it is and what's resonating with you. You also have to be super honest with yourself. Are you taking that investment banking job because you think it sounds cool at parties? Or do you really love investment banking? So I think it's just being honest with yourself. And I think it's scary. And, you know, it's not an easy thing to do, but nothing in life worth doing is easy. You just have to keep trying and seeing what resonates. And then when it does, make it your craft, make it your purpose, make it your mission, make it a vocation, and really go deep with it. But until then, keep trying things. So you kind of say yes to everything in the beginning, and then you'll say no to everything else once you discover it.
And do you think is there some sort of like pattern or formula to become a successful entrepreneur? If we have that listener that is thinking, you know, maybe they have an idea, maybe they're thinking about kind of dipping their toes into even this real estate type environment to get some income additional passive income to then pursue their business adventure. Do you think there's any like traits that you've noticed in your friends or family that, you know, make them more predisposed to become entrepreneurial?
Yeah. I mean, I think an entrepreneur has to deal with uncertainty. Number one, you have to get comfortable with uncertainty. And then number two, I think you have to have grit. You have to love being an entrepreneur. Like hockey players love hockey. Mm-hmm. And so a hockey player loves hockey enough to get their teeth knocked out, and they get up and they keep going. And as an entrepreneur, you have to love entrepreneurial endeavor enough and your mission, your why enough to get knocked down and keep getting up and pivoting and doing it. That's not to say that at some point you don't quit. I love that quote from Mr. Wonderful from Shark Tank, Kevin O'Leary. Mm-hmm. If you're not profitable by year three, then this ain't for you. Go and do something else. But you got to give it a good amount of time. 3 years is plenty of time. And if it's not working by year three, then you need to go do something else. You're not in the right thing.
And so I think with, you know, getting into real estate, I think what a lot of people might think is a barrier is having really any money to start. Like, I know your story, you had $3,000 that you were able to use, but maybe that was, you know, maybe that was not, maybe you didn't have much more than that. But if someone's listening and they only have like a couple hundred bucks that they can spare, is that enough to get into this game, or should they continue to save and wait?
Yeah. I mean, I would say that, and on my Art of Passive Income podcast, we talk about this. $500 in this business gets you in the game.
Wow. Okay.
That gets you enough to do mailings and neighbor letters. So from there, once you get the deal, well, if you lock up any asset, 20, 30 cents on the dollar, there's someone else on the other end of that deal, 50, 60 cents on the deal dollar. You could just wholesale it and then start generating income. In fact, I even have a course that's free that teaches you how to double your money 30 days or less. So you don't, you know, you need commitment more than cash, honestly.
Okay. Yeah, you just need to be committed to learning, would you say? I mean, if you go to the landgeek.com website, learn with us, start here, you know, there's a few tabs where you can get started in terms of learning what you do. Is there a certain program you'd recommend as just the bare bones beginning way to get into this? Maybe if someone isn't even ready to put their money in to an investment, but they're ready to invest in learning, do you have anything you'd recommend to them?
Yeah, I'd say the landgeek.com/quickdeals is a free course that will teach you how to double your money 30 days or less. And okay, while you're working in that and seeing if the model resonates with you.
Yeah. And that would be, is that something that you'd recommend someone gives a certain amount of time? Like if it doesn't work for them in the first 30 days, is it possible that maybe they weren't doing something correctly? Or is there, I guess, what is it a guaranteed system that you've built out and you've seen over, you know, time and time again, it kind of works for a variety of people, or does it take a certain person to understand how to apply that?
Well, if you do it long enough, your success is inevitable. So I think really it's more important that there's joy in it.
Okay.
So, or if there's not joy in it, that you have such a burning desire that you'll, you know, embrace the suck long enough to become competent. And then once you're competent, you will find the joy. So it's sort of a catch-22.
Okay.
In the sense that you've got to have enough grit to get over that hump. And I would say that on a long enough timeline, everyone can become wealthy. It's just, you've got to stick with the right thing for long enough for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Just be able to put in those reps and be able to not quit, at least not too early, right? Keep digging and keep trying to see if, you know, you never know when you're going to reach that goal. I love thinking of that picture of the guy, he's digging underground. It's like two guys over top of each other, and one of them is digging, and he turns back when he's like 6 inches from the treasure, and the other guy just keeps going and gets to it. And so it's like, you never know when you're going to hit that. So I kind of, at least that's how I'm thinking of this program. Maybe you go on that website and download that free guide. Maybe the first 30 days, it doesn't work the way you want it to, but you give it another month or two, maybe another 3-4 months if you need to. And at some point you'll see that success. Is that where we're going with this, Mark?
Yeah. I mean, I love that Zig Ziglar quote. If you'll do for the next 3 to 5 years what other people won't do, you'll be able to do for the rest of your life what other people can't do. And he's not saying if you do for the rest, you know, if you'll do, you know, for 1 month what other people won't do. No, it takes time. Everything in life, and this is just the tragedy of life, right? Mm-hmm. Everything worth doing in life takes time. Unfortunately, all the bad things in life happen in like a second. But all the good things in life take so much time, whether it's a meditation practice, it's getting fit, it's, you know, having deep relationships. All these things take time. It's being a successful entrepreneur. I wish there was overnight success that was long lasting. I wish there was a quick, rich way to do it. There just isn't. And anyone who's telling you that there is selling you something so that they can get rich.
Yeah. And I love that. I love that you're a podcaster as well, Mark, because, you know, that's a long-term game as well. I mean, you have over 590 episodes on your The Art of Passive Income show. And that's, I mean, that was not an overnight success for you either. I mean, you now have a very successful show. you know, I would strongly recommend, I'll tag this in the show notes too. I'd strongly recommend you check that show out, guys, because I think that Mark is kind of coming at this with, he's got a wide range of expertise, and being in podcasting too. I mean, that really is like, you got to put in the reps when you feel like there's no one even listening. And I'm sure you've seen over time, you don't know when that moment's going to happen where you start to see growth, you know, more so than you thought it even could be.
Oh, 100%. And I think for me, the key was letting go of the results and just enjoying the process. And then when they came, great. But I wasn't attached to, you know, so many subscribers or so much income or whatever it was. Pick any vanity metric. I just wanted to get better at podcasting. And I wanted to talk to interesting people about subjects that I selfishly wanted to learn more about. And so when I took it from that angle, there was a lot of joy in it. And if one person listened to it, great. I didn't really care. My self-worth, my self-identity wasn't tied up in it.
Yeah, you're doing it for you. And I think that that should resonate with a lot of people as well. And you know, in a career, in any type of thing that you do in life, it doesn't have to define you if you sometime find out that that's not what you want to do anymore. And so that, I think that that's very inspiring for, you know, you might have someone out there listening who is working a W-2 job and they're wanting more and they don't necessarily know where that might lead them. But by staying committed to learning and being able to, you know, listen to podcasts such as this one or such as Mark's with Passive Income, you know, by investing in that learning, I think that has shown to be successful for people that I know, that they just continue to pour into learning. Have you seen that for you as well, that, you know, continuing to focus and hone your craft and learn more and more each day keeps you sharp?
Focus on just a few books and just read those books over and over again that are really going to move the needle in your life and really integrate that information. Because reading 100 books in a year, but not understanding one of them isn't really valuable. But if you read 3 books in a year that are, you know, have tremendous amounts of wisdom and knowledge, and you can integrate that into your life, I think that's a way more valuable use of your time.
Right. Yeah. And being smart and resourceful of your time as well, I think is probably something that a lot of us struggle with, being able to like block off time to stay focused. There's infinite distractions in today's day and age. And so I think that it's sometimes challenging to sit down and focus on reading, you know, when there's so many other ways to engage with your cell phone and you have Hulu and Netflix and all these things. So setting aside time at least has helped me do that. Mark, have you noticed that there's anything that your students have struggled with most when they come on board to work with you? Is it just applying the knowledge? Is it learning the knowledge? What is like the holdup for a student? If we have someone listening that kind of wants to become a student of yours, what might you recommend to them as far as how to succeed in your courses?
I think the fundamental issue with all new students is fear, and getting over their fear is an internal thing. And at some point, they're going to have a fear of failure. They're going to have a fear of success. They're going to have a fear that this isn't what they should be doing. They're going to have a fear that this should be what they're doing. But what am I going to tell my friends at a party? Right? I buy and sell raw land. That's not sexy at all.
Yeah.
right? Or I start making all this passive income. They have a fear that they're outgrowing their peer group. And so at the core of it is fear. I think that holds everybody back from living their best lives.
If you don't mind answering, Mark, what is your greatest fear? Do you have one that you currently can think of? Or have you just seen it all, so to speak, and you just really don't let it rattle you?
Well, I mean, I've really worked on it. I'm sure I have fears, and they, what you know, because of my meditation practice, I kind of watch them, like you'd watch a movie, and I watch a cloud go by, and you kind of feel it, and you watch it pass, and you kind of just curious about it. Oh, that's interesting. That's fear. So I'm not too attached to the fear. I can feel it, and I can still move through it. And sometimes it's a really good signal. Like, we need fear. I mean, if I'm in a bad neighborhood, fear is going to serve me really well. I'm not going to be like, oh, that's interesting. That looks like that person might be pulling a gun out.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah.
You know? Oh, I'm noticing I have fear. No, you'll react in the moment. But existential fear, like you know, sort of like an anxiety, like this irrational fear of let's call it, you know, failure, so to speak, in business. Well, really, I mean, there's no such thing. Like, it's just, it's a learning opportunity. So you can reframe these things. So there's really very few true fears left, right? Like, you know, we're on top of the food chain. We don't have too many things to worry about. So I would say that, I have fears, but they don't really stop me from doing what's necessary to achieve my overarching goal in life, which is, you know, to be a good ancestor.
Yeah, absolutely. Tying it all back in. And that really resonated with, I was recently doing a fair amount of yoga over the last couple months, mainly just looking up YouTube videos to do that. But the instructor on one of those videos said something very similar to what you just shared in terms of observing your thoughts and realizing that your thoughts don't define you, whereas you are actually the person observing those thoughts. And that cloud metaphor, that really resonates with me, you know, is just being able to let things go if they aren't serving you well as far as where you want to go. And realizing, you know, there's probably a lot of irrational fears out there that people have, where if they were to just observe that and kind of let it float by, over time they might realize that it's not that scary anymore. Yeah. So I really appreciate that, Mark. Extremely valuable content that we just had here. I hope that everyone enjoyed it. If someone wants to reach out to you and learn more, Mark, what's the best way to contact you?
I think the best place to start is thelandgeek.com, thelandgeek.com. And certainly they can get the free course, thelandgeek.com/quickdeals.
Mark Podolsky, thank you so much for your time, sir. We'll look forward to following your journey. And thanks for being a guest on the Eric Mueller Show.
Thanks, Eric.